Today on Seculo, Biden looks weak in meeting with Mexican president as the border crisis spirals out of control.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo.
Brand new stunning numbers from Border Patrol. Here in Del Rio sector where we are, over the last week alone, there have been more than 13,000 illegal crossings. That's almost 2,000 people every single day.
We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110.
Temperatures out here are supposed to hit about 108 degrees today. It just goes to show you this border crisis is not seasonal. It does not slow down in the heat. The migrants are not listening to Kamala Harris when she says do not come. And most of all, when the administration says the border is closed, take a look at the video and judge for yourself.
And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Second half hour of the broadcast, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will be joining us to talk about all these issues, including the president's meeting with the Mexican president. The president now is overseas. He's officially in Israel as we speak, with meetings there, and then traveling to Saudi Arabia. So we'll get into all of that today on the broadcast. But first was really just how weak. And again, I mean, you could say that about a lot about this president when it comes to foreign policy, especially, and domestic policy. When it comes to issues like inflation, he kind of just throws his hands up in the air and says, well, it's Putin's fault. Well, foreign policy as well. So we previewed it yesterday. The president of Mexico, remember, who decided not to attend that meeting that was held in Los Angeles for the first, the U.S. had gotten it for like the first time in 20 years. Of the Americas, the Conference of the Americas, and he boycotted his attendance, sent a deputy, and that was supposedly sending a political message to President Biden. Well, he had this to say yesterday. Now, I kind of want to break it down. This is the president of Mexico, the terminology he was using, which I think he might have been trying to use terminology that President Biden would like, but he was using it wrong as a not his first language. Take a listen.
The conservatives are going to be screaming all over the place.
Pero sin un programa atrevido de desarrollo y bienestar.
But without a daring, a bold program of development and well-being,
no será posible resolver los problemas.
It will not be possible to solve problems.
So he said the way out is not through conservatism. The conservatives may scream about the policies, but that we need a bold leadership. You have to have a strong and not maintain the status quo. So I think he was using conservative in the sense of people who are conservative in their approach to issues. But, Dad, we know when it comes to immigration and the border, we don't want conservative approaches. We want those bold approaches. We do not want the status quo. The status quo is 200,000 people, 200% of normal capacity, just in Del Rio's migrant in their custody.
13,000 illegal crossings yesterday. I mean, I want you to think about
Del Rio.
In Del Rio, just in the Del Rio sector. Just think about how many people that is. It fills up your municipal auditorium times two. This is the problem when you don't have a border policy. This is the problem when you don't have policies. But what you've got here, but now you've got a immigration crisis, a border crisis, a national security crisis, all this happening simultaneously. So you got to ask yourself, as this is all unfolding, why do we have no policy? Why is there not a policy in place that makes sense? And here's the reason why. There were policies that we had that make sense, but they're going to do nothing that was previously done. And I don't care if it's in the border with Mexico or if it's in the Middle East. And that's the problem when you have a administration that is looking at basically, let's just make sure we don't do anything they did, even if that worked. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. So I want to take your calls on this.
I'd love to hear from border states.
Yeah, and border states as well. What do you think the president should be doing right now, to secure the border? Because there are steps he could take, but what would impact your community best? Whether you've had illegal immigrants dumped off into your communities, maybe far from the border, or do you live in border states? 1-800-684-3110. Well, if you could just say, President, do this, and he did it, what would you tell him to do first? 1-800-684-3110. Because the Mexican president's saying, you got to be bold. You got to be bold here. We haven't seen a lot of boldness from the Biden administration. We'll be right back. June border numbers out yet, but the Southwest border encounters have been rapidly increasing since January. There's no sign of a slowdown. So in January, there were 154,000 encounters. February, 165,000 encounters. In March, a big jump up to 222,000. And then it's really, I mean, it's sustained massive numbers since then, and you get the warmer months. So we get the June numbers, I think it's going to be staggering because that's really the first summer month. But May is also, April, May, very warm, and more people move it. So 235,000 encounters. Then in May, we know the final was almost 240,000 encounters. We're dealing with a far-left Mexican president who would be more in line with Bernie Sanders than he would be with even Joe Biden when it comes to politics.
I think that's right.
And so the issue is when he says we want transformative things that aren't the status quo, generally I agree with that. But he's not stopping people from coming across the border.
Well, I was going to say.
Remember, this is a president. Donald Trump negotiated with Mexico's president at the time to incentivize them to stop people from coming across the border and then right. also to secure their own southern borders versus the Northern Triangle country so that they could not send those caravans through.
Because they're going to get to the root of the problem.
Yeah, incentivize it. They actually got to the root cause.
So if you stop the access points at the initial entry points, you're not going to have the exit point problem, which is what we have on our southern border. The southern border is the end of the road
yeah.
for the people that are in these basically, you know, thousands. We're talking 13,000 just in the Del Rio sector yesterday. So if you look at it that way, if you look at it as getting in there early, getting to the southern portions of Mexico so it doesn't transfer up, that's the way you deal with this. The problem is, and this is I think what we have to realize, this president doesn't want to do that. And then you've got the president of Mexico, as Jordan said, far left guy, who makes the statement that we need something to be transformative. And I just, when they say transformative, I get very nervous. When you've got a leftist president of Mexico and they're saying transformative, that's like AOC saying transformative. So where does that go? What does transformative mean? Open borders, let people in, and just wherever they go? That's transformative. Dangerous, but it's transformative. So I think we have to be cognizant of exactly what we're dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, no one wants the status quo, but their status, their change and their radical changes are not the same radical changes that we support. In fact, ours aren't so radical. It's going back to the policies that were working. You know, I just wish they could divorce the policies from the former president, but they cannot do it.
No.
Remain in Mexico worked. We incentivized Mexico. When they said they'll build the wall, they incentivized them. They effectively were building the wall because the money we were receiving back from Mexico and saving. Why are those policies that worked, that took the pressure off of our Border Patrol and ICE agents, that let the judicial system start catching up to the number of cases, also so that we weren't keeping kids in cages, so that we didn't have 200% capacity, 200% capacity in Del Rio sectors in their facilities. 200%.
Look at last week.
That's inhumane.
I know. Del Rio... If you take the Del Rio side, I'd sure like to hear from people on these border areas, 1-800-684-3110. If you just do Del Rio sector and the Rio Grande Valley sector, you are over 21,000 in a week. And that's just two sectors. So if you're being impacted by this, we want to hear from you, 800-684-3110.
Yeah, 1-800-684-3110. I mean, when you look at this again, Mexico has said they will contribute $1.5 billion towards infrastructure at the U.S. southern border. I don't even know what that means. They said that improving processing.
Well, here's the thing. I think we have video for our social media platforms and TV, and we'll describe this to our radio audience. So let's go ahead and play this. But this is what it looks like. I mean, there are people wading through the Rio Grande Valley rivers.
That's the
massive
one right now, yeah.
And you're talking...
They say you can't see the end. They can't see the end of the people.
They're crossing a river.
A pretty thick forest. So you come out of that in the desert, but it's thick. It's lush. So you can't see.
These caravans have thousands and tens of thousands of people.
Probably in the water right there is almost 100 people.
Oh, more than that.
Just in the water.
Yeah. I mean, it's folks, this is.
It's very dangerous, too.
It's dangerous, and they will not. You're exactly right, Jordan, because the previous. They're so paranoid. Of doing something that worked because of their view of the previous administration, they will not exercise good judgment.
No.
And that's a problem.
No. It's like, this should not be partisan. It should be about what's best for the United States on our border? That's what I want to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. People already, resources are tapped out with inflation, the numbers, with the economy. So this is not a time.
We can't absorb it.
When you just absorb hundreds of thousands of people easily into a system and act as if that's not going to have an impact.
Listen to these numbers. January, 150. This is how many our Border Patrol agents encounters they had. January, 154,000. February, 165,000. March, 222,000. April, 235,000. May, 239,000. You know how many people that is? That's over a million encounters.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have, you know, the country's barely hanging in there financially. To put this kind of stress on a system that's broken. Now, we've said we want a comprehensive immigration reform, and I still believe that we need comprehensive immigration reform, but you can't not secure the borders. That's the first part of comprehensive immigration reform, is have the borders secure. But it's affecting every jurisdiction in the United States. It's not just the border states. It's around the country. We're taking your calls and comments. Randall on Facebook said Mexico must help. Foreign aid should be conditioned on them assisting on border security. I agree. And Mexico right now has no incentive because we're not going to reduce their foreign aid. So they have no incentive to do anything. Under the previous administration, they sure did. You want to take that call out of Arizona?
Yeah, let's go to Ernest in Arizona on line one. Hey, Ernest.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I just had a comment or two about the enormous amount of illegal aliens that are coming across the border. Especially affects places like Yuma and Del Rio, Texas, and these places obviously have a hard time trying to take care of these people as they come across. They're not medically examined to see what diseases they have. They're not given indoctrination or the shots.
Right.
And
it's a humanitarian crisis. And Americans are giving and kind people, and even people that cross illegally, you got to be humane. But the system is so overtaxed, it doesn't function. This is the problem. Folks, when the system's overtaxed, guess what? It doesn't work. And the system is just overtaxed. And this is the great problem that we have with this, and it's where there's no policy. Now, at the ACLJ, we put policies together. We're working with members of Congress on this. But I will tell you, Jordan, you know this. This is an uphill battle to get anything done when it comes to the border right now. Almost impossible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because you have an administration that will just is not willing to do common sense security measures. They punish. They blame the Border Patrol agents. They've demonized Border Patrol. They've demonized ICE. They've demonized the system. And so when you demonize the system, you can't rely on the system to help. But what they are doing, and this is, again, we were talking to Senator Blackburn about it yesterday with the prices again. It's intentional. They want the flood of the migrants.
100%.
They want this. And now they think somehow, long-term politically, this is helping them. But they are getting beat up among Hispanic voters right now. U.S. citizen Hispanic voters right now. They lost that special election down on the border in a plus 20 Democrat seat. I mean, they could lose it again in the fall. This is why we have really no idea how the elections in the midterm elections are going to come down, because we could see some demographic shifts amongst African-American voters, amongst Hispanic voters that we started to see under President Trump. And the media really pushed back against, trying to demonize the president and make him come out to be, you know, racist or upset with these groups. And so it kind of tapped down again in his reelection efforts. But then I think we're going to see it again in the midterms. I think we're going to see that the Democrats are not getting the Hispanic vote this way. The way that Joe Biden had to, you know, apologize, called tacos. I mean, this is
unbelievable.
Because they see them as just votes, not as
human
people.
Beings.
Yeah.
And this is.
And for this group, they're expendable until they're U.S. citizens.
Yeah.
Because they can't vote yet.
Right.
Legally. So, if some die. If some don't make it, some kids get – it's a long-term play for them is what I mean. And that's just – to me, it's you don't sick. Do long-term political plays when human beings' lives are at risk. You could do a long-term political play of how do you educate those voters to want to vote for your party. Sure, that's fine. But you don't use them and say, well, one day they'll be happy because we're the ones that let them cross.
No, that's exactly
waiting
right.
Waiting through rivers.
Folks, I want to encourage you to do something if you're able to do it.
We're in a matching challenge month of July, and your support of the ACLJ makes a huge difference. Any amount you donate to us is going to be matched. So that means if you donate $50, we get $100. If you donate $35, we get $70. I mean, this is just the way it works. It's really important for our budgets. You're seeing this broadcast every day. That's part of what you're paying for. You know we've got our office in Washington, D.C. working on legislative solutions to this mess that we're in. We're working on the economic side of this. We're in court fighting. Your support makes a huge difference. Jordan's going to let you know how to do it. We need to do it now.
Yeah, absolutely, folks. Go to ACLJ.org. You see matching challenge right on our homepage. You double the impact of your donation. That means you donate $25 right now at ACLJ.org. That's like $50 for us. We've got a group of donors that will match that donation in the month of July. Donate today, ACLJ.org. We'll be right back. Secular. We're going to continue with the border issue. We do want to update you on some issues involving life as well. The ACLJ is working on out of California. We told you after Roe v. Wade was overturned, there was work already being done by the ACLJ, not just in the states that were easy, but in the toughest states when it comes to life, because that's where the long battle is going to be. The long battle is going to be in the New Yorks and the Californias, the coastal states, the New Mexicos, which are saying, you know, we're going to fly people in for free to have their abortion and issues like that. And they're trying to put in, of course, language, very extreme abortion language at the state level. We've caught them on it, but we also realized it was a plan because they were doing it in multiple, their lobbyists were doing it in both coasts, Maryland and California. And one of our attorneys, Olivia Summers, she was testifying on one hearing in California, and then CC. Another hearing popped up, and because we were registered there to testify, she was able to testify there too.
That's right. So
same day.
We've been watching an Assembly Bill 2223 out of California, which uses the perinatal language.
I cannot believe they are still putting that in.
Right,
there.
They are still putting
Explain
that
to
in.
People, what perinatal means?
Perinatal means after birth. So, and it can be, depending on what definition you see, it can be almost up to a year after a baby is born. Usually it's up to 30 days, but depending on what the definition is, which they have not defined it, it is after the baby is born. So this bill 2223, which we've been watching, we followed it out of the Appropriations Committee to the Judiciary Committee, and this was now the Health Committee, which we were watching the testimony there. The only amendment that this bill has had is talking about perinatal death due to causes that occurred. They added this, due to causes that occurred in utero. But of course, that still means if you have a botched abortion and the baby survives and is completely alive and living and born, you can still kill that baby. So we were legally.
Under a statute that authorizes this, folks. When that Virginia governor, Northam, said that, remember that whole controversy? Well, if the baby's born alive and then you want to abort him afterwards, well, let, you know, we make him comfortable and then terminate the baby.
Right. That's exactly what this is doing.
In law.
And so we were able to object to that bill. And then as we were waiting for that bill, another bill came up, 1918, which actually provides funding to train just specifically abortion providers. And so we were able to then object to that bill as well. And it was interesting because the one of the two Republican senators that were opposed to these bills really went after them, pointing out the medical shortage that California has with cardiologists, orthopedic surgeons, neurologists, general surgery, thousands and thousands of medical positions that they have a shortage on, but Planned Parenthood only cares about let's give funding for abortion doctors. You know, so we were able to stand against that as well.
I want to say this because, you know, to be able to knock out, as you said, Jordan, two bills that were being discussed, that means you're not just able to do it, make the legal argument, that's fine, but to be on top of this. This is a 50-state issue now. Now, we've got ACLJ Action, which is putting together this whole plan. That's our C4. But you got the ACLJ on the legal side of this. Right. That are dealing with this. Now, we just got word, and we filed in this case in U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, Memphis Center for let's put the brief up on the screen. This was filed in the United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, Memphis Center for Reproductive Health versus Slattery. That's the government defendant. We came inside of the government here. It's very interesting. The Dobbs decision came out, and the court on its own, after the briefs had been filed, ordered that the law be put into effect, which in this case was a heartbeat law. So it was, once a heartbeat's detected, you can't have abortion except for the rape, life of the mother, and incest exceptions. And the interesting aspect of this is we're starting to see this ripple effect in federal courts. We represent Governor Noem in South Dakota. And on that case, it's, Jordan, just an informed consent law that said if you're going to seek an abortion, you're going to have to get really informed consent. None of this, you know, everything's fine, don't worry about it. They, Planned Parenthood and those groups challenged it, but now in light of Dobbs, I'm expecting that order any moment saying that law's constitutional.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so you think about it, what the overturn of Roe v. Wade did, we still have the fight on the actual abortion procedure laws, okay? So whether what gets banned, what gets restricted. But there were also all those other issues, like you talked about, informed consent, what the pro-life pregnancy centers could do. Why was there so much outrage? Why is there still so much outrage at pro-life pregnancy centers? Because they play such a critical role here, and the abortion industry knows. So long as you have this law now, Roe versus Wade overturned, and functioning pro-life pregnancy centers, they are in a tough spot to try and convince someone to kill their child. And so they have to go after the pro-life pregnancy centers. But this overturning of Roe versus Wade also overturned a lot of court-made decisions, very complicated, some, you know, depending on which court of appeals you were in. But basically, you know, what informed consent was okay, what informed consent wasn't okay, what was too much of a burden, what was not enough, what wasn't a burden. We don't have to think about that anymore.
No, well, here's the thing that I want people to understand what we're doing here. So when we talk about the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, that's a federal court of appeals. So that's the Sixth Circuit, covers Tennessee and a number of other states. In the case of CC, you were just talking about, it's a state issue. So it's not on the federal court system. It's in the legislative process in the state of California. And we're on top of those issues too. But this is what the fight, this is what the fight's going to look like going forward now.
Right. It's going to be in all 50 states, whether you're in a red state or a blue state. We are going to see legislation like trigger laws or whatever. They're going to go after those. So you can't just say, hey, we've won and, you know, we can all go back to sleep now. You know, yes, we have a good decision out of Dobbs, which was correct. There is no constitutional right to abortion. But now each state, each of the 50 states get to say on their own how they're, when they're going to protect life, when that's going to be, and what they're going, what kind of protections they're going to put around
that. But what we have to do is mobilize our lawyers around the country on this, and then at the same time, that's at the ACLJ. Jordan's got the 501c4 ACLJ action, which is taking initiatives in each individual. You mentioned Kansas. You mentioned some other states.
Yeah, we're looking at Kansas right now. If you're in Kansas, there's a ballot initiative that needs to be done in August. It's on, and again, those votes pre-midterm elections. So you want to make sure, we're going to make sure through ACLJ action. That's going to be one of the first states we have advertising in,
right,
to get people out, to turn out people to vote. So that's Kansas specific, because there's some, in some states they need to make some corrective changes before they can even get a law in place, because of, you know, they put in a right to privacy in 1898 into their state constitution, or they followed something like Roe and it put those rights in when it was not as partisan of an issue and people weren't as informed on abortion. So we're also looking at that way. The states that are there's quick fix states, there's long term states like the New Yorks, the Californias, and there's the states that are kind of in the middle where you need to do probably, there's probably more than one step necessary to put in good pro-life laws. And that's what we're really utilizing the C4 is to get that. It's easy to pass the legislation usually with pro-life legislators in those states or even with the people, but you got to get the ballot on the initiative. You got to get people out to
it's
vote for the initiative. Yeah.
It's like, these are complicated processes, but what we're telling you is we're giving you a comprehensive approach on all of this. We're giving a comprehensive approach for the legislation, for a review of the legislation. We're looking at all of it.
And I'll tell you what, our members and our member support matter, because when Olivia was testifying, she was able to say on behalf of over 500,000 of our members, we stand against this law. So please stay engaged. Go to our website. Read our information. It's important.
And support the work of the ACLJ. This is a matching challenge month, the month of July. I know that things are tough, but if we can, folks, again, if we can get you to donate right now, if you're able to, if you're financially able to, that's the only people I want to be talking to right now. If you have to make a decision between a donation and anything else, don't donate this month. But for those of you who can donate, it's a great time because you can effectively double the impact of your donation and do it at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. Now, I want to get to a couple of calls that we just got that came in on the border as we started the broadcast today. Secretary Pompeo is going to be joining us as our Senior Counsel for Global Affairs the next segment of the broadcast. So let me get to these phones. Let me go in order of who's been holding on. Lynette in Texas, first online too. Hey, Lynette.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
We live a couple hours from Del Rio. And, you know, our biggest news used to be who won the football game a few years ago. Now we're seeing a rise in crime, drugs, cost. We've had busloads of unaccompanied minors being brought into our town. And we see more gang members and just more crime overall. And what we need to do is enforce our border laws. We need to enforce the border laws and to get back to letting people through legally and doing the process and get back to what works.
Yeah, well, I think this is the thing, Lynette. It was working. I mean, under President Trump, you're a couple hours away from Del Rio. Now, he inherited a crisis, but things were getting better, weren't they?
They were. They were getting quite a bit better.
Quite a bit. I mean, you see, quite a bit is a lot in a few years. When you have a crisis like this, it's been ongoing and going. So these policies worked. That's what Lynette, you know, this focuses to. The policies worked. They refused to enact policies that worked because they happened to be policies designed by President Trump and his advisors.
They refused to acknowledge that those policies worked, and that's the problem. If a policy works, keep the policy going, even if you're the new administration or now the 2 years into this disaster. The fact is, the policies that work, use those policies. Let's grab another call.
Yeah, Richard in California, online three. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Jordan, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm an American with Mexican descent.
Yes.
And my problem is, okay, so you come over here illegally, and you get all the benefits, which you would get as a citizen. You get an EBT card, you get housing, you get transportation, all that stuff, which is wrong. It's inflating our country. It's not helping our country. It's not embracing it. It's exploiting it. The second thing is that, yes, I'm for our borders being protected. It's a national security, but we should do something. I'm for this bill. If we put our border patrol with Mexican border, interchange them so they're both on both sides, same policy, so they know how to react on both sides. It probably even help Mexico out if they have anyone else coming in from their borders that are not Mexican or from Guatemala, from Central America, they can stop them. But they have the same policy for both Border Patrol, for Mexican border, United States border, interchange them.
You know, Richard, under the previous administration, that they had that kind of policy. It wasn't U.S. Border Patrol agents on the Mexican side of the border, but the Mexican side of the border was doing, we had a coordinated plan to stop the inflow.
Both at Mexico's northern border with the U.S. and their southern border with the Northern Triangle countries. So the issue is that Mexico is a strong enough country, if we incentivize it, to prevent a lot of this because it's not actually Mexicans. So people are having to come there utilizing Mexico as a route. And again, we know that there's always going to be some people trying to illegally cross. You can put them, but that's something we have to deal with borders. People want to get into America. But I think, you know what we're talking about here is, why are we allowing, I'm not even talking about the fundamental shift in our culture, because I think a lot of these voters are going to end up being conservative voters one day. And I think the Democrats are wrong on that. But is that, when are they ever going to be out of the shadows? Is part one. Because even with Democrat majorities in the House, the Senate, the White House, they're still in the shadows. People have been here for 20 plus years.
I know this.
They can't get agreement on that.
Right.
But at least we had working, you know, our first job, your first job as president is to secure your own people. The drugs alone that are killing people, that's one thing. The human trafficking, that van of people. I mean, it's just, it's disgusting. It's wrong. It's inhumane. And it's not about radical politics. It's about policies that work. Just policies that work. Humane policies that work. And at this time right now, that's what we support the ACLJ. And I think we're going to get to a point where, remember, President Biden's not going to have as friendly of a Congress. And he's going to be pushed a lot harder after the November elections if people turn out and vote the way they're supposed to. And things could change significantly. We'll talk about it with Secretary Pompeo when we get back. Secular. We're joined now by our Senior Counsel for Global Affairs, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Secretary Pompeo, I want to get right to it because there's a lot going on here in our country and a lot, of course, with the president overseas. President Biden, he landed in Israel today, and he's claimed that the relationship with Israel and the United States is deeper and stronger than ever. I have a feeling, I'm going to ask you this, I have a feeling I know your answer, but do you buy that at all?
Well, Jordan, it's not whether I buy it or not. The Israeli people know it. That's just not true.
Yep.
The Israeli leadership and the people in Israel can see clearly that when Hamas attacked Israel just weeks after the Biden administration took office, it took them days to just make a simple statement to say the Israelis have the right to defend themselves. And when there were arguments inside the Democrat Party about actually underwriting Iron Dome, or when we decide, you know, we're going to try and cut a deal with Iranians that will give a clear pathway to a nuclear weapon in that theocracy, those authoritarian thugs in Iran, I think the Israeli people can see that is very different from how I behaved when I was Secretary of State, how America behaved during my time. And they know that that creates risk for them. And we should all know that creates risk for us here in the United States as well.
So, Mike, the Jerusalem Post has a headline, and this is what it reads. Biden's visit, and then it says, colon, when a politically weak president meets an interim prime minister. They're talking about the fact that you got a president that is definitely viewed internationally as weak right now. You've got Israel going through their fifth election in 3 years. And at the same time, you've got a PLO, which is a terrorist organization, let's be clear. And they're demanding that in order for there to be substantive meetings with the president and substantive progress, that three things have to happen. One, they will remove Israeli recognition and they will cut their security ties unless Israel gives them these access to points and land and more money and all of this. And I say to myself, and you know this as well as anybody in the world, if Israel were to cut its security ties with the Palestinian leadership, with Mahmoud Abbas, he would last about 20 minutes before Hamas would take over.
Yeah. Some of this is complicated, Jay. Some of this is really straightforward. You just highlighted the straightforward piece.
Right.
The security in Judea and Samaria, the security in the entire region is dependent upon a capable Israeli security force. The fact that President Biden, given his domestic challenges, is there meeting with Mahmoud Abbas, probably telling him, don't worry, we're going to set up a consul in Jerusalem, is deeply destabilizing for the region and bad for the United States and certainly bad for those of us who believe that Israel is the rightful homeland of the Jewish people. Abbas is weak. He is corrupt. He has no incentive to make any kind of deal with any Israeli leader, let alone if they're making their way through their governmental changes as well. And we shouldn't forget, the Gaza Strip still sits there with Hamas controlling the joint. And the combination of those two, terrorists in Gaza Strip and the corrupt leader in Judea and Samaria, is not something that's going to lead to increased prosperity. It's why we went the path of the Abraham Accords. It's why we were isolating Iran as never before. And when I think that maybe Israel is going to be asked by Makunas to cut security ties, that is a recipe for danger and the reason and loss of life, both Israeli life and life, loss of life for people in the west part of the Jordan River as well.
You know, Secretary Pompeo, one of the issues that's interesting about this trip is that you've got also a visit to Saudi Arabia. You wrote on Fox News, the president's trip to Saudi Arabia will likely not correct his egregious policy missteps. What do you see as the outcome? Like, what? I mean, is he going there to beg for oil, for gas? We get that that's part of it. But what comes out of this meeting ultimately?
I think he was getting different counsel from his team, and finally President Biden said, fine, I'll go. Remember, he campaigned on eliminating fracking and energy production in the United States and making the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia a pariah state. That's a recipe for high gas prices and people being unable to afford to cool their homes in the summertime. And that's what they're up against. And so they're trying to go scramble to say, we did our part. We tried to put this relationship back in place. I've heard some good language from some on the team. They talk about trying to integrate the Arab nations, Israel, the Gulf states. I think that's all a good thing. That's a corollary, a follow-on to the Abraham Accords. But boy, when you say that there are no socially redeemable qualities of the leadership of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and you're going to make them a pariah nation, Godspeed. Good luck. And by the way, and then sit across the table from the Iranians. That is not the kind of thing that actually delivers less risk to the United States of America.
You know, I was just thinking about that. We have an office in Jerusalem, and I've had that office for a long time. So we've been there negotiating when there's been a lot of conflict. As you know, I've gone to the International Criminal Court multiple times representing Israel's interest. They don't recognize the jurisdiction of the court, but we went in to say this is the position. And have been successful. I mean, so far the ICC, shockingly, with this new prosecutor, has not been near as aggressive and over the top as the predecessor. Having said all of that, you worked on significantly reshaping the Middle East. And you mentioned the Abraham Accords, and this was historic. This was more successful than the Oslo Accords. It was more successful than Camp David. It built on a process that has tremendous potential. And as if this administration is saying, well, Mike Pompeo did that, so we're not going to do it, even though they know it was successful and is successful even today.
Hey, Jay, one should never have their policy be vindictiveness or we're going to do X because the guys we don't like very much did not X, right? You should try and get it right for America. There were a handful of things that President Obama left for us that we tried to build on, right? We're just trying to do that thing to put our people first, to put the American people first. And, you know, what about party politics? It was about security and prosperity. It does appear that they've headed down this path that says, well, we've got to go get back in the JCPOA because Trump and Pompeo got out. We have to go deal with a boss because the previous administration built out the Abraham Accords, just kind of telling the Palestinians, we're not going to let you have a veto on peace in the region. I hope the cooler heads prevail and non-political heads inside the Biden team prevail, and they can go build on what we did. It doesn't belong to Republicans. It belongs to America. And, you know, I always think about our young men and women, so many who fought and risked their lives in the Middle East. If we get this right and do this well, the risk that some president someday may have to send them to go fight and risk their lives and in that place that's proven so difficult for so many decades will be greatly reduced. And that should be the mission of President Biden on this trip. And every American leader as we move forward.
You tweeted yesterday, as Mexico's president was with President Biden at the White House before he left to go overseas, and a meeting people trying to figure out exactly what the Mexican president meant by, you know, not was he taking a swipe at actual conservatives in America? Or did he mean conservative policies? I mean, he is a leftist, but you tweeted out, there remains a crisis on the southern border, even though Biden and Harris ignore it, and the mainstream media aren't interested in reporting on it. I mean, as we speak right now, there's Fox News is reporting they can't even see the end of the amount of people that are crossing the Del Rio sector over the Rio Grande right now. I mean, there's just people coming out of the woods
in droves
right now. I mean, what could each month, and we know the June numbers aren't out yet, but we know it's going to hit another record. What can we do right now to affect change on the Biden status quo? I mean, I feel like the November elections are very important, but also talking about solutions that worked under the administration you worked in. People in Texas have been calling us, Secretary Pompeo, saying things were greatly improved in those 4 years.
Jordan, this is a conundrum because you have an administration that just doesn't even want to address this, doesn't want to think about it. It's literally kowtowed to the most progressive elements, the most open border crowd inside of their party. And to watch what's going on, we all know. We saw the loss of life that took place there now two weeks back, right? Dozens of people that died as a result of these failed border policies. We know what this means, not just on the southern border. God bless these governors in Arizona and Texas who are trying to do their best. But we know what this means to people all across America. These illegals are going to end up all over the United States, and they're going to engage in activity that will be detrimental to the things that we value so much here. The tools that we have at hand are to speak about it, to be honest, frank, to highlight the risks that happen to the United States of America when we have an open border as we have today. And then elections matter. We had a policy. It was called Remain in Mexico. It delivered a deeply reduced flow of illegal immigrants into our country. We ought to simply go back to that. It would put us in a very sound place.
You want to go to Lori's call in Texas online too, Secretary Pompeo. Hey, Lori, welcome to Secul. You're on the air.
Hi, Lori.
Thank you for taking my call. We are from a little town called Quemado, which is just south of Del Rio.
Yep.
We're right across the street from the Rio Grande. We have a relief ministry that we've served for 22 years. At this point, things have become so difficult that our ministries are afraid to basically cross the border.
This is the problem, Mr. Secretary. You've got an organization that's giving relief to people across the border, and now they can't even do their function.
Too dangerous.
Too dangerous.
Oh, my goodness. I've heard similar stories that, Lori, breaks my heart. I bless you for all the work you're doing to try and help these people who are in difficult circumstances. But the responsibility of the federal government is to get this right. I'm glad the governors of Texas and Blake are trying their best. But in the end, it's the federal government's responsibility to protect American sovereignty, to secure our borders, to protect you and your people who are trying to do really great work to make life better for those who are really struggling. When it becomes too dangerous for folks who are trying to provide aid and comfort, sort of the best of America, you know you got it wrong.
You're absolutely right. Thank you, Secretary. Ms. Secretary, we appreciate it. As always, Mike Pompeo, of course, is our Senior Counsel for Global Affairs. Back with more. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us.
Welcome back to Secul. I want to take the call, and we're getting some issues as well involving our international work. Jamie in New Mexico on line one. Hey, Jamie, welcome to Secul. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to shine a little spotlight on some of the costs of the illegal immigration that's going on. My son works for the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma, and they recently got a contract from HHS for $500 million to open a facility for unaccompanied minors south of San Antonio. So they're tasked with opening this facility. HHS can't handle what's going on, and they're just peddling it out at that kind of cost to other entities.
They're throwing money out to figure out that maybe somebody will do something. And again, Cherokee Nation may be able to do this or not. I have no idea. But the idea that you're doing that tells you, and we're talking about unaccompanied minors. You know, in the law, we call that human trafficking. Okay? That's mostly what it is human trafficking.
Yeah, and we see that growing. Human trafficking is growing across the world. I mean, the amount of people that cross borders for trafficking, human trafficking purposes, is it's just growing exponentially.
Yes, and I think what, again, we take back a step at the border. I don't mind creative solutions if the Cherokee Nation is the right place to do it. They've got the property, and they have the resources, and maybe they need the jobs. You know, that's been an issue on Indian reservations, and that we need more jobs and good paying jobs. Maybe that's a positive solution, but it does seem like a last minute kind of absurdity, like $500 million,
half a billion.
It's $500 million of just for kids who are never going back to wherever they're from, and have no family here, totally unaccompanied.
Right.
So the potential for abuse is so high there for those kids long term, because people will try to claim them, bad actors try to claim them, whether it's involuntary servitude, sexual trafficking. I mean, the list goes on and on. And so this doesn't work without significant investment into people.
Yeah, Congresswoman Flores has a very interesting comment on this. Let's play it.
People are going through a dangerous journey, increasing child sex trafficking, alarming rates. This is something that we should all come together and work for the safety of all immigrants and, of course, innocent children that are being dragged into child sex trafficking. That's a reality, and I think that conversation wasn't had.
That she is 100% correct. And this is the human tragedy of all of this. And as Christians, we understand the burden of taking care of the least of these, but you got to be able to take care of them. That's the problem. And so this process has to be fixed and stopped. We do have a situation in Nigeria. You'll remember that the Biden administration removed the country of concern from Nigeria, which is the largest, if you look at it pro rata, largest persecutor of Christians in the world. It's pretty much the determination, right?
Yes. So when Biden administration removed Nigeria from the country of particular concern list, that was at the same time that Nigeria has more Christians killed for their faith than any other country. And a Christian is killed for their faith every 2 hours in Nigeria.
Yeah. And why do you think that happens? So we started saying, why would they have removed the country of particular concern designation in Nigeria when all this persecution is going on? And then Jordan, your team started working on this as well. And I hate to say you trade persecution for oil, and we're going to find out if that's the case, but it's sure starting to look like it.
Yeah, it is. So we've actually filed a new FOIA. And the reason we did that to send that FOIA today is because the Biden administration's removal of that CPC, that country of particular concern,
it's up on the screen
designation,
right,
coincided very closely to when Secretary Blinken, the current Secretary of State, had a meeting with the Nigerian president. Now we have reason to believe that the Biden administration at that meeting was trying to curry favor with Nigeria so they would sell us oil. So it all comes down to the politics of oil. And the only reason we're in that position is because of administration policies that took the U.S. from being a beggar, from being a country that exported oil and gas, made money off other countries buying our cleaner oil and gas, to a country begging third world and developing world countries for their oil and gas. And that's what we're doing now.
But to remove, like you said, to take the valuation. You say, well, we need the oil. Therefore, we're going to remove the designation. And this is what they're doing.
Like Saudi Arabia still has this designation, and the Trump administration didn't remove it.
Nope. They were still on the list.
It's still a country of concern when it comes to human rights.
And they should be acknowledged as that. But to trade it for oil, because we're now not energy independent, shows you the fallacy of this. But we have sent out a Freedom of Information Act request, and we've raised this at the UN.
Yes, absolutely. You know, we know that Nigeria is Africa's leading gas and oil exporter, so it totally is logical to think you remove them from the countries of particular concern list just days before you go and meet with them. That just seems a little bit sketchy. So our FOIA not only asks for information surrounding why Nigeria was removed from the countries of particular concern list, but also what was going on about that meeting. What kind of information was transitioning about that meeting, and specifically with oil and gas issues?
I just think, Jordan, the problem is this. With issues we've discussed today, you've got failures on every front, domestically, internationally, energy independence, the situation in the Middle East. I mean, that Jerusalem Post headline, you know, kind of said it all. I mean, really. And it says, you know, weak president meets with interim leadership of a government that's fallen. This tells you the nature of, Biden's visit. This is the Jerusalem Post headline. When a politically weak president meets an interim prime minister. Does that not say it all?
Yeah. I mean, and you know, they don't use language like that in other countries about the U.S. president, unless it's just like the going accepted statement. And what they mean is he's politically weak. He's not able to accomplish much in the United States. Policy-wise, they just throw their hands up in the air, like when it comes to the border, when it comes to immigration. And it's just crisis after crisis. I mean, you know, started the Afghan withdrawal. I mean, it's almost in such a short period of time. We're only getting close to the midterm elections.
That's the problem.
So many crises.
I mean, well,
and yet we're supposed to be focused on hearings about stuff that happened last election cycle. And they have more crises than I can even remember right now off the top of my head, because it starts on day one with them because they changed policies on day one.
And they changed them. And I mean, it was just interesting what Mike Pompeo said. There were policies of the Obama administration.
They built on.
They said we didn't agree with all of them, but there was this particular policy. We built on that policy. This group says whatever was done before is bad, so let's just not do it, even if it worked, even if it was helping America. So when gas, if you remember, was a couple of bucks a gallon, how do you like it at $5.54? Not so great.
I guess, you know, and this is when people don't listen to President Biden when he was campaigning and said he was going to end that industry.
But he meant it.
And he meant it. He is. I mean, he right now, you know, now he's demonizing him for profits. But what he meant is that he will punish you for being reliant on it. And we're seeing that punishment every single day, every time you go to the pump, every time you go to the grocery store, every time you buy anything right now, that you are being punished by your government because of the reliance on oil and gas. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. Again, we have a matching challenge this month of July. And I want to be clear, I know the economy is tough. So for those of you out there, I don't want you to have to make a decision between donate to the ACLJ and eat this meal or be able to buy this for your kid. So if you're in that situation, ignore what I'm about to say. But if you're in a financial situation at the ACLJ where you can make that donation, this is a great time to do it. And we really rely on you in these tough economic times to keep everything going, where we're not just stagnant, but we're able to continue to expand and increase our work. Like, let's grow off the victory against Roe v. Wade. Donate aclj.org.